On 105 FM and online.
Hello and welcome to the first official edition of Life and Art with Cambridge Junction on Cambridge 105 FM. My name is Daniel Pitt and I am the arts producer at Cambridge Junction. So I'm here every month, once a month. I'm here on Saturdays between 1 and 2 p.m. It'll be podcasted and it'll be separated out and put on little bits of the internet in segments so you can hear little snippets of the show. So to give you a sense of what we've got coming up today, I've got a Timing, who is a music promoter and artist who's been putting on experimental music and sound art events for the last 12 years in Cambridge. We worked together most recently with an event called Monomania, which happened at Cambridge Junction, at Aidan Abet, and the areas in between in March this year. She's got a new project happening at the Museum of Technology from this Saturday, running for 2 weeks. So if you are into experimental sound and visual art and meticulous things, then you should get along to that and we'll be hearing a bit more about it from her. It's called Hidden Channels. Hattie Simpson will be coming in to talk about the film festival, which is just finishing up at the Picture House Cambridge Film Festival. I think it's the 41st Cambridge Film Festival. It's a lot of Cambridge film festivals. It's quite impressive. She'll be giving her verdict on the programme this year, how it was, she's always great to have in the studio. And then we'll also be having artist Issam Korbaj, who is opening an exhibition in a church with Kettle's Yard on Friday night. It's open from Saturday onwards to the public. He's in Cambridge at the moment. It's my expertise, I guess. That's probably a strong word. My interest. And particularly about a trend for, well, a three-show trend over two venues for shows happening in the dark. Which is a bit unusual. And there's a few more things. We'll be taking a look forward, what's happening in the next few weeks. And I'll be talking to you for the next hour. Hello, I'm joined here in the studio by Issam Korbaj, who is an artist based in Cambridge, originally from Syria. His exhibition hello, Issam.
Hello.
Could you tell me what the exhibition is? There's a couple of different installations and what these particular works have, where they come from for you.
Yes, the exhibition is, or the installation is called Unearthed, but it has two parts, if you like. It's in the church next door to Kettle's Yard. It's in a very beautiful church called St. Peter's Church. The installation, if you like, is an invitation for you to look slightly differently about the space. As soon as you enter, in front of you, there is a small note written by my mother, who was illiterate. So her writing was inspiring to react to somebody's, if you like, trying to make sense of her thought in a form of writing. And I try to make this quite big piece imitating her place, if you like. So I took the piece of paper, turned it upside down, and used my wrong hand, which is the left hand, made some writing as if it was Arabic, but it's, even if you know Arabic, you don't understand it. So this is one piece on the wall called After Image.
Was she writing in Arabic originally?
Yes, yes. And the whole idea that putting it there on the in that context, if you like, of the space, the writing, you don't expect to see something in a church of this nature, the Arabic nature, or the, if you like, the this kind of almost like naive nature of making marks,
so
as a form of writing or as a form of drawing, if you like. But it works incredibly well. Having her note next door, having this big piece called After Image, meaning that it's after her piece. But it was really a very nice coincidence in the church. The minute we came in, there was a very beautiful, another kind of after image. There was two shadows of candles supposed to be there, but they were not there. So the smoke on the wall. Installation on the wall. So this is part one.
And what does the religious context of the church bring to it? How did it end up being there?
Good question. The church actually has its own long history. It's 11th century church, but at one stage, Jim Eat, the person who actually established Cattle's Yard, was looking after the church, and there is a stone in his memory. And I think that the church now is used by Cattle's Yard, that is, to invite artists to do installation in the space. And every year there is one or two exhibitions in the church. So the idea of, because of...
It's the small one, just up the hill,
exactly,
slightly. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Very intimate. Very elegant space, and you go inside as, I mean, it looks like you are in a countryside somewhere. You don't expect to be in a very busy city centre.
No, it does seem quite secluded up there. Yeah.
Absolutely. So when Cattle's Yard were thinking about this complex of exhibitions in the gallery, they asked me if I would be interested in an installation. And it happened to be that I am working with something. I was working with that particular piece. And I exhibited this piece in London in a completely different context, in a wall context. So now it is in the church, but it's on the floor.
Yeah.
So this piece, a wall piece on the, if you like, on the walls of the chair, but there is another piece which is on the floor, and it is called Unearthed in Memoriam.
And that one's made up of books, is that right?
Yes, book covers. Old book covers that I have drawn on them or painted them, or but they are mostly book covers that is, I just made one single line on them. And they look like, I don't know, in many cultures what they do when somebody dies. In Syria, we put a picture of somebody and we put a black line on the corner as a memory.
Of the book?
No.
Oh, sorry.
Of if somebody dies in the family, and we take this person's picture, could be a male or a female, and we hang it on the wall and we put a black line in the corner. As if it is like a form of mourning, this person. So I took this idea of as if it's a picture frame with black line, but there is no picture of a person. But because there is so many people died and nobody knows their identity anymore.
Yeah.
So this is why I thought the idea of having no faces at all, but just these black lines. And spread them on the floor.
And what books have you used in the making of it?
It is just old book covers. That is,
it's not important what the book was, about the book cover.
Absolutely, the book cover that has already discarded, if you like. They were supposed to be going to the skip.
Okay.
And I like the idea of giving or re-energizing them and re-creating a new life in them.
Great. I'm going to be asking, this is the first proper episode of this monthly radio show. I want to be asking most guests who come in what they also make of the wider art scene in Cambridge. So what you've lived here for how long?
25 years.
25 years. obviously. But in that 25 years, do you think Cambridge has a thriving art scene?
Interesting that, actually. I will tell you what happened. Interesting you said that I'm from Syria. When I came to England, I came from Russia. I used to live in Russia.
Right.
I studied in Russia, in St. Petersburg. Coming to Cambridge, it was a shock, but in a completely different way. It was a shock of scale.
Mm.
Russia and St. Petersburg is an enormous city, big street. Arriving to Cambridge, it looks like a toy town.
Yeah.
Made out, it's almost like a theater set rather than a city. It's, everything is so small, everything is so intimate. And I remember in the early 1989, the first time I visited Cambridge. Mm-hmm. And it was really difficult because if you think about it, there is nothing but Fitzwilliam Museum and Kettle's Yard. And
for visual art, for visual art. And it's still the same, really.
Still the same, having the
occasional other things.
No, there is now much more. In comparison, we have Wising Art, we have Cambridge Artworks, we have quite a lot of
Aidan
Abett. Yes, absolutely. And we have many small galleries. More activity. There is more investment in the visual art, but still considered
what made you stay then?
It's actually quite a very beautiful place in many ways.
It's scale.
I found it's a very intimate scale, and I really like the idea of being somewhere in the street that I could walk, or I could cycle, or I could say hello to people. I don't find big scale cities speak to me. I go to London, have an exhibition, have a look, and come back. I just this is probably the nature of my outbringing.
Great. It was great to have you here, and a Cambridge artist exhibiting in Cambridge with the best gallery in Cambridge. Well, the most prominent gallery in Cambridge. It's in St. Peter's Church, which is just on the little hill next to Kettle's Yard. I think you should definitely go and see it. It's happening alongside Nina Pope and Pope and Guthrie. I can't think of what Nina's the other one's first name is. Karen Guthrie, Nina Pope.
Yes.
They are exhibiting in the main Kettle's Yard Gallery at the same time, which I'll be telling you a little bit more about later on. Thank you very much for coming in.
My pleasure.
Nice to speak to you.
Okay, all the best.
Running alongside Issam Korbaji's exhibition in the St. Peter's Church next to Kettle's Yard, back in the main gallery, is an exhibition running till the 23rd of November from today, called Past, Present, Somewhere, Films and Projects by Karen Guthrie and Nina Pope. They are a duo that's been making work for about 50 years. Projects, the most recent of which took place in Cambridge as part of the artist residences alongside the Cambridge Northwest Cambridge development that the university is building, where they made a model village called Tomorrow Today, with local people, made out of cob, which is a ancient mud house building technique. There's also films which shine a light on often marginalised or unknown communities. There's a cinema room which presents three of their most important feature-length films. Humanistic and at times tragic comic, result of their three-year-long participation with the Reenactment Society of Kentwell Hall. I think that Kentwell Hall hosts the annual History in Action sort of reenactment weekend, which I have to admit I actually ended up going to once many years ago. from a performance point of view, it's a particularly interesting type of performance reenactment. There's another film called Barterville, a nostalgic and unconventional road trip down memory lane with ex-Beta factory workers from East Tilbury in Maryport. And another one called Jaywick Escapes, the portrait of a deprived and long-forgotten Essex seaside town. It's a, one of Kettle's Yard's more contemporary exhibitions, and I think it will be quite extraordinary. You should definitely go along. Open till 23rd of November. And while you're there, definitely go into the house, if you haven't been before. You have to knock to get in, and it's one of... It's a very unique modern and 20th century art collection in a domestic setting. Everything's as it has to be, as it was left by its previous owner, down to the apple on the table and the light switches, which are particularly fine. They look like they are sort of old-fashioned light switches, but they are Perspex. Probably the best light switches in Cambridge, in my humble opinion. Yeah, I think Kettle's Yard's on a roll at the moment. Potentially you've heard about the Cycle of Songs project, which happened in the summer and months really leading up to that as part of the Tour de France cultural offer. It was led by History Works, who are a Cambridge-based history and radio organs company, and Pilot Theatre. And the only part of the project that you can be part of still is downloading the app, the Cycle of Songs app, if you look on either the Apple App Store or the Google Play Android Store. Then you can download the Cycle of Songs app, and across the city there are different points if you on the app where you can hear different modern choral works performed and written by local Cambridge choirs. There's some work by Michael Rosen by the Fitzwilliam Museum. There's the Dowsing for Sound Collective, who used the story of Parker's Peace, and lots more. I'm going to play out one of those. It's going to be called Why We Ride. But the reason I'm doing this now is because on Saturday, i.e. today, the 13th, as part of the Open Cambridge weekend, the Cycle of Songs team are showcasing the project at Great St Mary's, the church just off of Market Square, from 9:30 p.m. onwards, and at the University of Cambridge Museum shop. They'll be singing the songs all day. That corner where the shop is, in times gone by, I haven't got the date to hand, but there was a particular moment when to campaign against women cycling and to stop them being allowed into the Cambridge University, men erected an effigy of a woman cycling on the corner where the Cambridge University shop is now. And it's some great photographs of that particular time. I'm going to play you Why We Ride, and you should definitely download the Cycle of Songs app. The whole team did months of work with about 50 different community choirs from across Cambridgeshire. And they performed over the big weekend in Cambridge when the Tour de France was coming through. But this app is there forever, and it's a nice, unusual audio tour of Cambridge. It's why we ride. That's a tongue twister for me. Oh dear.
Parker's Peace, Gonville Place, turn right into Regent Street, Sydney Street, Brown Church, St John's, Trinity, King's Parade, Trumpington Street, down the road to Trumpington High Street. The road is ready for me. I hear a blessed choir.
Why We Ride, which was composed by Kirsty Martin with Rowena Whitehead, performed by the ReSound Choir, and the lyrics are by Kirsty Martin, based on the poem Why We Ride, which is by Holly McNish. It was a local spoken word and artist and poet, almost a celebrity here in Cambridge, and Inja, who is her partner and an amazing MC and DJ. That is the Cycle of Songs project. Download the app, use it, go visit the team at Central Great St Mary's today. See you there. Joe Brooke, also known as Bad Timing, has joined me in the studio. Hello, Joe.
Hello.
Joe's been putting on live experimental music and sound art events and other arts-based events in Cambridge for 12 years now.
13.
We worked together on Joe's project Monomania, which happened in March, a festival of sound art, visual art and live art across Aid and Abet's old building by the station, the spaces in between the walk from Aid and Abet to Cambridge Junction and Cambridge Junction. And Joe's been working on her next big project, which is opening today at the Museum of Technology. Tell us a bit about Hidden Channels.
Okay, well, I'd say that's a good, probably a good place to start. The Monomania Festival, got a particular interest in specific buildings, specifically industrial buildings, like the old Aid and Abet locomotive workshop by the station there. And of course, yeah, the best example of that in Cambridge is probably the Museum of Technology, which, if you don't know it, is the old Victorian sewage pumping station.
It's a long river, isn't it?
Yeah,
walking
it's
towards,
kind of...
out to the...
It's off Newmarket Road, right next to Tesco's. Tesco's is where the old gas works used to be.
Yeah.
And it was next door, so that was a, you know, it was a very sort of heavy industrial area, basically.
The Cambridge has grown.
Yeah. Something, you know, probably be the last industrial building standing. But it's, if you've never been, it's really, since the 70s when it stopped actually sort of active life, it's become a museum of 20th century technology that sort of relates to Cambridge, kind of outside the academic sort of thing. So it's the sort of engineering thing, Pye of Cambridge, who did lots of pioneering work on radio and TV manufacturing. Instrument making companies. So there's a massive steam engine and a gas powered engine. The gas engine still runs, produces some amazing sounds. And it's, yeah, the sounds produced by the building itself, sounds produced by kind of, you know, technology which has kind of got a DIY aspect to it, which particularly interests me. And that sort of follows on from lots of artists I've featured over the years and artists that I've featured.
And there is some overlap between the artists, isn't there, in these two projects?
There is, yeah.
Two, at least? Holly Rumble and Chloe Leeper?
One with sound artist and one visual artist. Chloe Leeper is an artist who's based in Cambridge and partially in London. She's been based in Cambridge. She's been visiting the museum over the summer and coming up with a sort of visual responses to the space, the materials, and the colour, sort of drawing out. As its own art exhibitions I've seen in there previously are more self-contained. They don't necessarily sort of look at the building and try and respond to that to make artworks, new artworks. So she's created several sort of drawn works and a sort of larger scale installation. The museum is a very interesting mixture of rough spaces and more polished kind of steam engine rooms that you might expect.
And what's the site she's using then?
She'll be displaying pieces throughout
The
rooms, actually. Yesterday we were on site installing with her and other artists from Bristol that we'll come to in a bit. She was creating, you know, quite responsively, actually. She's been thinking about it very meticulously, which is her way of working. But isn't it when she actually got on site and installed, you know, she was able to spend that day seeing what worked and that really picked out. This is a very large scale space as the building kind of comes down the hillside towards the river, basically. It's cut into the riverbank to create a space that's probably at least 12 metres high.
That's the end that I've seen most, yeah. And so it's a happening over two weekends. Opening today on the 13th and tomorrow 14th, and then next weekend 20th and 21st it's open again, but with a live event happening on Saturday the 20th between 5 and 8. So what should we be expecting on that evening?
On that day you'll still be able to see all the other installations that are going on, but yeah, it'd be quite a good day to visit. Although most of the show is actually free entry, this is a ticketed event, I'll be bringing some of the artists that I've worked with from around the UK that are working with sort of sound, you know, sound and sort of mechanical invention, basically. So we have Graham Dunham from London, who's got a piece called Mechanical Techno. It's kind of a joke about the fact, you know, techno is, you know, the stereotype about techno is it's very easy to make. You turn on your computer and you know, the best techno is not easy to make, but, you know.
Well, it probably is. It's just marketing, isn't it? The best techno is just marketing.
anyway, it's, but yeah, in his case, the techno, it really is mechanical. You know, a turntable with various kind of objects on it and these sensitive contact mics. And as it goes around, it sort of, you know, creates a rhythm. And he puts an extra layer of turntable on, and eventually it's about, I've seen this performed in Birmingham, there are about eight layers of different kind of mics and turntables all sort of whizzing round and kind of hitting, you know, it's real sort of Heath Robinson
and slowly but surely it builds up the techno sound.
It does, yeah. So you might, on your computer, you start with one beat and then something else comes in. And this, you physically see it happen.
Yeah.
And it's, it looks quite precarious, and it's safe for him to be doing, I should say, health and safety. But it gives you quite a different view of how the music's created, really, directly from the mechanism. Another artist called John Chandler, I'm very pleased to have. He's doing a modular synth set. So if you don't know, a modular synth is a set of panels with a bit like a telephone switchboard, which they've got a vintage one of in the museum you can play with. You create sounds and patterns by you just having a lot of patch chords, wires basically, and plugging them in as you go.
Lo-fi electronics.
Yeah, basically low tech. There's another aspect of kind of drawing out hidden qualities and things is that are using high quality field recordings, including recordings that have been made underwater. Okay. Using special microphones called hydrophones.
Wow, how do they work? They're sort of like contact microphones, but with contact being with water. Or
that's a good question. I should have a better answer.
It doesn't really matter.
I've never had to play with it. Yeah, somebody offered me one. I was feeling good that day, and I said, "No, I've got enough stuff to play with. I won't have a hydrophone." we've came artist who is currently back in Slow Dive, actually, but he did a project called Below Sea Level, where he went out to Home Fen near Peterborough, where the fens have actually dropped below sea level, and did some study and responded in sketches and creative writing, sound and music. And I was just doing second day rescue. So we're hoping to include that.
Great. And then Stephen Cornford. I've got a couple of tracks to play by a guy called Stephen Cornford. What's he going to be doing for you?
Okay, so he is a sculptor, sound artist, festival organiser, based in Bristol primarily. And he specialises in creating installations of collections of obsolete technology, modifying them so that you sort of hear them kind of, turned inside out and sort of reflecting in upon themselves. So he'll put little contact microphones inside cassettes. We have in the UK debut of a piece called Archipelago, which contains 53 CD Walkmans. Some of them are
played. Where do I even find 53 CD Walkmans these days?
Well, eBay. I know. Some interesting questions about, in the museum we have collections of, vintage light bulbs and radios, and these things are in the transition from being kind of things which you use every day and value to being junk to being museum pieces, and sort of 20th century technologies and all kinds.
Mm.
But what he's done in this piece is some of them are playing back, as you'd expect. He's modified it so that the motor takes a sound input from the other ones, and the sound goes into the motor, and they just kind of twitch and judder. And so close up, it's this very sort of edgy, kind of frenetic kind of thing. From a distance, it almost sounds like water. It's the collective sound of it. And we've installed that in a very special space to the museum, which is it's a tunnel which used to be a kind of flue of a furnace, so kind of leading to the chimney, the massive chimney that you see from all over town. So you've got sort of headroom of about 5'9", which is okay for me, but no one taller. So you've got this very intimate industrial space with these strange neurotic machines in.
Great. I'm going to play a track off Stephen Cornford's, an EP, in a vague sense of the word, called Music for Earbuds, which I have to confess I'm wearing over-ear headphones, but it's if you're in a car or by computer. Actually, if you're in a car, don't plug in earbuds. But if you're anywhere else and you can plug in some earbuds, do, because the way this audio is constructed, I think it definitely works best in that situation. here we go. This is called Music for Earbuds 4. And after that, you might hear a little bit, not the whole bit, of Music for Earbuds 3. And a little bit more from Joe. That was a bit of Music for Earbuds 4 by Stephen Cornford. One more artist that's performing on the live event on the 20th is Holly Rumble.
Yeah. I wanted to particularly mention her because she's doing a very special performance and sort of directly picks up on some of the ideas of Monomania about solitary performers and solitary listeners. At the museum, there's a strange thing looking much like a Dalek, actually, which is a kind of miniature air raid shelter, basically, which is outside in the yard. And Holly's been working with something called binaural recording, which you have two microphones, one on either side of a kind of dummy head, and that picks up sounds as you would hear it yourself, and you get some very interesting effects when you play that back to people. She's going to give performances for one person at a time in between the main live performances inside the main building.
We're at Cambridge Junction over the last year and coming up again soon, we've had a couple of shows which have used binaural audio recordings for the audience. One was called A Journey Around My Skull, which at one point the audience put on the headphones and listened to the binaural audio recording mixed with live recording from the stage. It gave the effect of having your head being cut into in brain surgery and then brain surgery taking place. That was quite a cool way of using it. But then actually this week just gone, in preparation for a new show which is at Cambridge Junction and the University Festival of Ideas on the 28th and 29th of October, Fiction by David Rosenberg and Glenn Neath is a binaural experience in complete darkness, creating a sort of dreamscape and the experience of falling asleep and dreaming. So it's becoming more and more widely used.
Actually another production at Cambridge Junction which I attended as well, which used that.
Ring.
Yeah, which gave the impression of the room being completely reconfigured. And it was very effective, sort of disorientating experience.
Yeah, Fiction is the follow-up by the same artists as Ring was, which was in here last autumn. So a year later, they're making the new piece. And Ring was all in the same space, and you as an audience member were given the feeling of being in the same space, but you moving. This time they've been recording in large spaces and small spaces and outdoor spaces, and so it should conjure the feeling of being transported outdoors and then to a small space and to a big space, and we'll see if it works. But yeah, I'd look forward to seeing Holly Rumble using the same technology.
Yeah, her stuff's always worth doing. I've worked... So yeah, for example of somebody inventing new stuff constantly.
And on the streets in between, the streets by the station.
Yes.
In Monomania, she was doing her Hear a Pin Drop project, where she has travelled the country mapping out different places where you can hear a pin drop and where you can't, which is surprisingly a large number of places in urban spaces.
Yes, I didn't expect there to be many good between the train line, Hills Road. I didn't expect there to be many places, but you looked at the map afterwards and
there were quite a few. Yeah. I've got one more short part of Music for Earbuds 3 by Stephen Cornford to play out. This one's slightly less high-pitched than the previous one. And then I've got my frequent question for Joe about the Cambridge arts scene. Here you go. that's probably enough of that, I reckon. Don't let that put you off if that wasn't your thing. Bad timings events are always unusual and always worth going to. And things like that will always sound better live and become more interesting live.
I think it's, yeah, I mean, obviously we're on the radio, but in terms of this show, you know, as with other exhibits in the museum, it's, you know, looking at the technology and how that's used and the spaces and, you know, being on site in the spaces, I think, you know, so it's a good, it's, we're very conscious to work, you know, in sympathy with the exhibits of the museum. And so it's not usually open both days of the weekend. It's not usually free entry. So I think it's just a good opportunity to go to the museum.
Yeah.
If you've
definitely
never been.
Go. Hidden Channels. So my, before we leave you, I leave you, you leave me. Before we leave each other, Joe, what are your thoughts on the Cambridge arts scene? Because you operate on a particular part of it, I guess. And
it's across a few
time.
Different art forms. But so that's kind of, it does make it an interesting question to answer. I mean, it's, I often get, you know, the perception from people, you know, my primary art form is music and sound. And a lot of what we do is at a kind of grassroots level. And the name Hidden Channels was one that I came up with when we were lucky enough to have an annual slot at Kettle's Yard. And we were given that slot because we were sort of outside the established channels, really. Michael Harrison, the former director, felt it was important to have people that were not from Cambridge or Anglia Ruskin. But I think it sometimes it doesn't take much, you know, people. It's hard for people to discover that kind of experimental music side of things that is outside places like Anglia Ruskin. So there's sometimes a perception that, you know, nothing goes on in Cambridge, but
things do happen
in Cambridge. may not, you know, we're a very, we punch above our weight for the size of the city.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, for the touring artists that I have, you know, we're probably one of the smallest cities on the circuit for what we do. We like to think that's kind of an achievement, but I think, yeah, the visual arts is kind of in a bit of a healthier state. It's easier to see, and find visual arts.
That.
I think this weekend, the show at Kettle's Yard looks absolutely amazing. Actually, I've been.
Definitely. And at the same time, Wising's new exhibition opens as well.
Exactly.
So I'll be doing a little plug for later on.
So these two galleries that you might think, if you don't know them, you might think of it, you know, you might have preconceptions about the two shows they're doing. Well, Wising's show is actually in its farmhouse, which is usually its residential accommodation for sort of resident artists. And they've completely redecorated that artist to, it's not the only thing, but so.
Both doing really contemporary, unusual, exciting exhibitions.
Kettle's Yard, they've had, I mean, you know, they've been, my parents' old VHS is in that show. The Museum of Computing History have given them an old laptop to run Netscape 3 on. And in parallel with that, got Sticks of Rock. They've built Cobb building from mud and straw inside Kettle's Yard Gallery, so. Yeah, if you've got a sort of preconception about Kettle's Yard as being, you know, about, you know, it's obviously it's got its modern collection.
Watercolours or anything.
You know, rightly known for, but yeah, kind of.
They're doing good things, definitely.
So yeah, if you're not in Cambridge and you're planning a day trip, I think you could do a lot worse. And also it's open Cambridge this weekend.
It is, yeah.
So if you want to go to a nuclear bunker at Shire Hall or inside the Festival Theatre near Market Road, which is a place that most people don't even know exists.
Which is the Buddhist Centre.
That's right, yeah. But it's one of the only surviving Georgian theatres in this part of England.
I might make a visit myself as a theatre venue fan.
And yeah, most of Open Cambridge's events are free and most of them don't even require any bookings.
So. Yeah, and it's organised by the public engagement team at the university. And so as well as all those other buildings, it covers lots of the university buildings.
Yes, which, you know, these days are also
quite hard to get into.
They are, yeah.
Sadly.
When I first moved to Cambridge, it was a little bit more sort of free and free and easy. But
£2.50 at least to get in. Anyway, thank you so much for coming in, Joe. And
you
should get along to Hidden Channels if nothing else, then to come to the live event next Saturday the 20th.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's Life and Art with Cambridge Junction on Cambridge 105 FM. It's Hattie Simpson.
Hello, Daniel.
Hello, Hattie.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you. I like that you didn't use my very long and official title. Box office manager is much easier to handle.
Well, that's promotion though, isn't it? No, I'm kidding. So Hattie is bit of a film expert, as well as just being a generally enthusiastic chatter.
I wouldn't call myself an expert if you've heard my reviews on Thursdays on Drive Time with Sky.
Cambridge 105 favourite, they say.
That's a compliment.
I haven't heard anyone say that, actually.
Thanks very much.
The Cambridge Film Festival, which it's a very long running film festival. This is the 34th film festival. I think earlier on in the show I might have mistakenly said it was the 41st film festival. It doesn't really matter, it's a long time.
Long running because it's good.
It's great. Based solely at the, is it solely at the Picture House or majority of the Picture House?
Majority of the stuff is at the Picture House. There's often sort of stuff going on elsewhere. Last year they were things down at Cineworld as well, but not this year. But they are doing keeping up with the films in the Meadows as well, in Grantchester Meadows, and the films on the Jesus Green Lido as well, which I'm quite excited about.
How do they do them on the Lido?
They play it down, there's a big projection screen down one end, and then rather than actually like sitting in the pool, you can just sit on the banks. Like, that's fine, you don't have to, you know, have a swim to enjoy the film.
So you sit to the side of the pool and watch the screen at the end of the pool?
Yeah.
Or at the right of the other 91 metres away, or 91 yards away, sorry.
The longest outdoor swimming pool in Europe.
Yeah, supposedly. I swam it last week.
Well done. Times. What an achievement.
Yeah. As I said, it's life and art. This is life, the life section. So what are they doing in the future then, the outdoor screens?
In the future, we've got Oh Brother, Where Art Thou coming up, which is really exciting. It's one of my favourite films. It's a Coen Brothers classic based in the Deep South. It's stunning visually. George Clooney gives, I think, one of the best performances of his career. John Turturro as well, John Goodman, fantastic cast. The soundtrack is phenomenal. It's such an amazing film. It's beautiful to watch. So it's really exciting to be able to watch it in such a cool environment.
Definitely, and hopefully it isn't too cold.
I'm really hoping.
Probably the last outdoor screening there'll be this year.
Yes,
I'd expect.
Yeah, it's this Sunday the 14th of September.
That's tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yeah. At 8 o'clock, or 7:30, 8-ish, the film will start playing once it's dark, and it's free as well. So head along for some great cinema.
Great. And what were your top tips of the film festival?
Of the film festival, Magic in the Moonlight is the new Woody Allen film. It's not necessarily in keeping with his traditional style. It's more sort of whimsical. Although I suppose you could say that most of his work is quite whimsical if you're familiar with it. But it's delightful, it's funny, it's charming. Emma Stone gives a great performance. She just gets better and better, I think. And Colin Firth doing his Colin Firthy thing.
It's a great thing though, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't mind it.
Not a fan?
Not a
massive
fan.
You're more of a Hugh Grant fan?
No. I'm not a massive fan of either, but you know, being sat here in my Harry Potter Society hoodie, I think that gives indication as to my actor preferences.
I don't know what that means.
So elsewhere in the festival as well, A Most Wanted Man as well, one of Philip Seymour Hoffman's last films. It was in a similar vein to Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. It felt a little empty, to be honest. Like, there wasn't much substance to it. The storyline was, I don't know if brutal is the right word. It's an interesting one to watch, but Philip Seymour Hoffman 100% makes that film. It's stunning. And everybody else's performances are great, but they just kind of fade in comparison. And then I think because it is one of his last films, you know, a lot of people are watching it for Philip Seymour Hoffman. So, you know, if you're going for him, might be a little disappointed.
Fair enough. Is it on still, or is it just on in the festival?
It was on in the festival. It's opening soon. I haven't got the exact release date.
Right, so it was a preview, was it?
Yes.
Great. Yeah.
So it'll be in cinemas soon.
It's the kind of exclusive that Cambridge Film Festival gets.
It is. That's so exciting. I think we're so lucky to have it here.
In Cambridge. Imagine if it moved. It would be somewhere else's film festival.
It would be...
Hattie's obviously a big fan of family theatre.
I am a big fan of family theatre.
And family theatre is on at Cambridge Junction every second Saturday, roughly,
yes,
in the seasons.
Some fantastic stuff coming up this programme.
What are you looking forward to?
I am most looking forward to Tim Spooner's Assembly of Animals, which is playing out on Sunday the 12th of October. That's in J3 at Cambridge Junction. You can catch it twice at 11:30 a.m. and 2:30 p.m.
Tim Spooner is a... began as a painter, then he began making quite weird and wonderful sort of performances from a sort of visual art background, not performance art, I guess, short performance art pieces.
Yeah,
lots of meticulous little and then this is his first show for children. Cambridge Junction, he presented two of his previous works in a couple of our festivals. Monomania, which we discussed earlier with Joe from Bad Timing, and Sampled Festival in 2013, both featured Tim Spooner. So if your kids are into lots of bits of mechanical objects, animals that fill with air and blow up, lots of magnetised things, it's going to be a really wonderful thing for 3+.
It's going to be really exciting. I'm really looking forward to it. There's some great pictures on the Cambridge Junction website if you haven't quite got your head around what we're talking about. So check it out at junction.co.uk in the family theatre section. Tickets are £10 for adults, £6 for children, and family discount for groups of four with a maximum of 2 adults.
Oh. Considering that I do the programming for this stuff, I leave it up to Hattie to do the plugging for me. I should use her talents in marketing are wasted at the box office.
Another one that I'm really looking forward to is, you'll have to help me with the pronunciation, is Company Non Nova's
L'Après-midi d'un Fern version 1.
Version 1. This is going to be really exciting. It's kind of hard to describe. It's basically a plastic bag ballet.
Yeah, performed, but it's a French piece, as you might have heard. It's a to the Debussy soundtrack, and a man throws in cut up and sticky tape plastic bags into a vortex created by a series of different fans, and they dance and they control the fans, and they dance to the ballet, to Debussy, and then there's a ending I won't tell you about.
No spoilers.
It's just an extraordinary spectacle and so deeply moving for the simplicity of it that you should definitely, if you're an adult or a child, come along. There's evening shows for adults and family shows and Saturdays. Yeah.
I'm not going to lie, I was not totally taken in by this when you first told me about it, but having watched the trailer, which you can also see at junction.co.uk, it is absolutely breathtaking. I am so excited to see this. It's family theatre. I'm 22. I'll be there as well. So, so that's playing.
And if, even if you're, if like, it's really suitable for any age, it's just extraordinary. Anyway, thank you, Hattie, for coming in.
Thank you.
A brief visit. Hopefully, Hattie can be persuaded to come back sometime in the future. Keep us an update on the film side of Cambridge.
Absolutely.
Bye, Hattie.
Thanks. Bye.
Last bit of the show, really. This is the first proper edition of Art and Life at Cambridge Junction. I've been Daniel. I just wanted to tell you about the trend gripping Cambridge for theatre in the dark. Now, if you're listening on Saturday the 13th today, then you will be able to go tonight to Cambridge Arts Theatre, where I went to on Tuesday, I meant, to see Not I, Footfalls and Rockaby by Samuel Beckett. It's a Royal Court production, and it was in London about a year or so ago. It's a trilogy, just 55 minutes long, of three short, rarely performed works by Samuel Beckett. And things like that. It's all quite absurd. It's repetitive. It's verging on boring in some points because of the repetition, but at the same time hugely moving and existential. Now, I wouldn't say that this it's performed by one person, her name is Lisa Duan, and it's performed entirely in the dark, so the theatre has turned off all the emergency exit signs, all the little bits of light around the theatre. And the first of the trilogy, Not I, is just a mouth with a light just on the lips, centre stage, in pitch black, talking words as like fast as it can possibly speak. You can barely even understand what she's saying or what it means, but it's sort of a vocal onslaught in the pitch black, which really is quite affecting. The second piece walks up and down a platform on the stage slowly, and talks to a voiceover of it seems like her mother who's in hospital or dying, and then the third piece, Rockaby, is again precision lighting, and the actress is on a rocking chair rocking forwards and backwards in and out of the light. And it's just minimally lit beautifully. And I think it's a great bit of programming from the Cambridge Arts Theatre. And it's not easy for theatres to turn off all the lights. But back at Cambridge Junction, we are doing that same thing next week for a work in progress version. It's a test short piece by two... We used to be one of Aidan the Bet, if you knew those, the space by the station, and Georgie Grace. And it's an immersive experience where they've created a maze, a labyrinth, in our studio at Cambridge Junction. And the light is very, very low. And it's an opera. You'll be in space with opera singers and a few other audience members. And it's a soundscape plus live opera about debt, and it's not going to be an easy performance to be part of. But it's going to be a really extraordinary experience, and I really recommend you come and see that. That's The Hand That Takes, and that's on next Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at Cambridge Junction. And then in a few weeks' time, I talked about it earlier on, Fiction by David Rosenberg and Glenn Neath. I talked about it with Jove and Bad Timing. Binaural audio, again, in complete darkness. So it's a very simple thing to just... theatre is essentially watching people sometimes, but this is watching in a very different way. And in the case of Fiction, it's entirely listening, no watching at all. And that's it from me, from Life and Art with Cambridge Junction on Cambridge 105 FM. See you in a month.